set the record straight for a minute. Hate, I get it. Say it.
I want to know if he's bunking up with Tyrell, and if he's the big spoon or the little spoon. I think he'd be a little spoon just out of principle, because yeah, Tyrell's kind of, you know, he's got the elderly gravitas.
Yeah, and that's true. And using those key stats, they are the key things that we've used to pick out our Marcus. I don't appreciate the laugh because I recognize how fumbled that was and I lost my train of thought. But anyways, back to the
Marcus. No.
Wait, what was that?
I like that you came back to start it off fresh. We're gonna do it live, damn it. 3, 2, 1. Real legend never die. Still with the business, you should cry, let it
lie. Sign for an eye, let's go real suicide. And as always, we are gonna do it live here on Divots and Pivots. I'm Andrew LeDuc, aka Mr. Mallard. This is the Bud Copeland, Chief of Morale, giving me eyes for some crazy reasons. But speaking of live, if you missed it this past Sunday, we were live from Gate City Casino in Nashua, New Hampshire, watching and reacting to the final round of the Masters. If you did happen to watch or listen in, apologize for the crazy audio for about the first hour of our 3-hour show. I mean, let's just be real. We can't get around it. It was what it was. It got better as we went on. Tis how it happens with live shows sometimes. So we apologize, but thank you for joining us if you did. And also thank you to all those who came out and met us live. It was great to see a nice little crowd around us. So we had a blast, and we hope to do it again soon. Bud, Chief of Morale, how is morale doing tonight? You're looking happy. You're looking rested after a long Sunday and a long Masters weekend.
It's been a long Masters week, man. I mean, you forget the thing goes back to the Augusta National Women's Amateur, you know, 10 days ago, drive, chip, and putt, then the hype, the champions dinner, the par three. It's been a stretch. I'm exhausted. I think this morning I even had to remind myself there's this excitement again on the horizon with the PGA in about a month out in Valhalla. I got to talk to my brother-in-law. He's volunteering for that. Maybe he'll come on and give us some inside scoop. But we got some golf coming between now and then. I love the field this week, and I think this is where, I mean, we're going to talk about the Masters for the next whatever minutes, but this is where the PGA Tour is getting something right by saying, like, you know what, for at least these guys, some of these tournaments, if we want them to show up, make them show up, offer them more money, require them to show up, whatever. So we do have a solid field again this week. We're going to be missing the Live 13 or whatever the hell, however many of them showed up, and I want to say, like, more than half made the cut. And you had Bryson kind of getting close and sniffing it. I think it was kind of eye opening to see him have the revelation that Augusta mm-hmm. National is the one course that you can't out tinker. You can't go in the lab and figure it out. And here's the formula. There's no formula. I mean, I even learned something new this year watching it. I knew a little bit about this, but I didn't know it was this extreme. Where I heard on one of the coverages that they've never let anybody laser those greens. So there is no like laser mapping of those greens. And so when you look at some of the yardage books, the big thing last year or a couple of years ago when they updated these greens reading books is it used to give numerical values into the differential and the slope and this, that, the other. So they could literally sit there and look at a putt and start doing some calculations and really kind of, you know, formulaically dial it in. Now their greens books, they still have the slope and the kind of the heat map on it and shows arrows and directions. It's just not as exact. They ain't got shit for Augusta National. You get a blank piece of paper. Welcome. Fill it in as you get the round. So, I mean, that also explains why somebody like Akshay, you know, coming off of his big win and kind of breaking through, it's back to square one when it's your first round at Augusta National. Unless your name is Ludwig Ober,
I know,
or Ober. He was sitting there mucking it up, smiling, high-fiving the crowd at the turn on Sunday. I do think that whoever knocked that power bar out of his hands at the turn, if you missed that,
I saw that.
there's already people calculating score differential before and after. Who was the guy? Was he, you know, was he paid for by Liv? I don't know.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Speaking of paid for by Liv, I do want to get into your opening thoughts that circles back. And I really didn't have an opening thought for this week because the Masters is so prevalent. I've got some ideas of what's coming down the pike, and we'll give it some attention later. But I didn't really have an opening thought other than to say Ludwig Ober or whatever, kind of getting as close as he did is, I think, a testament to the depth and the programs that the PGA Tour has put into place going back years, you know, pre-LIV even, with the PGA Tour U system and how they're trying to groom and give opportunities to future talent and immediate opportunities. Look out. Next year, it's going to be Gordon Sargent. Mark it right now. Next year's Ludwig Aubert is Gordon Sargent. You heard it here first. Or that tall drink of water, Christo Lamprecht. But the one thing I think we can put to bed, figuratively and literally, is the Rory to LIV rumors. It was Scotty wasn't even done partying at that dive bar in Dallas that he showed up to with the green jacket on, which I fucking love.
Love it.
One of us. No, he's not Tiger. He's
our game.
Tiger. Let's not bring that into Tiger Woods won a major by 15 strokes. Let's just put that into perspective. And it was one of, it was early on. It was the US Open, right? Scotty is what we're seeing is excellence. It is kind of peak moments, but I think we might be seeing more of a Magic or Bird than a Jordan, Kobe, LeBron. Whole different conversation for a different day, but the sure Rory's not going anywhere, and whoever decided they wanted to get that out there, whoever took that bait, whoever, there are some names where you we've said like that doesn't shock me. I didn't say, Rory was the beyond the head scratcher. His entire life is ingrained with the PGA Tour DNA, so Rory's not going anywhere. And that's that. LIV, we'll get into the Master stuff here in a minute, but LIV is, I don't know, man. I don't know.
Yeah, Rory did exactly what he needed to do. He shut it down. He came out very quick today and shut it down. And let's be real, if these rumors were true, or at least were even remotely close to true, we wouldn't have heard from him. He would have done exactly what every other guy did when the rumors did start coming out. That it would have just
all their PR silence and hiding. What do I do? Yeah,
Rory, because Rory knows if it were true, it was already going to be massive backlash based on the last 2 years of his stance on it, whatnot. So for him to come out and then deny it publicly would, there's no way he would do that. There's no chance this was happening ever. I don't know how someone got the nerve to run with this and thought, oh, maybe it'll happen and I'll be right, but. It just caught wind, it caught fire, and then it was squashed. So Rory's not going anywhere.
It's again, we're going to talk about the viewership of the Masters this year. And, but it speaks to how hungry we are in a bad way for the wrong things. And I mean, Rory wouldn't be the first guy to deny it and then take the money, but beyond that, it doesn't pass the smell test, they would say, you know, it's like, this isn't even close to anything, right? Every other player just about down to Tyrrell. It was like, I could see it. You know, he's not exactly the king, you know, King Kong. So give him my bag. But all right. So we put that to bed. You texted me earlier. This was interesting. And this kind of, I dabbled in this about how we yearn for the wrong things in the wrong way sometimes. You texted me an interesting opening thought, and I want to give you the floor to explore it, because I was intrigued with not just the topic you chose, but how you presented it.
Well, yeah, because so we talked about this a bit on Sunday. I forget exactly which one of our guests we chatted with it about. I want to say it was Brian. But Zach Johnson and the whole, you know, did he cuss out the crowd or not? Let's be honest. We all, if you watch Sunday, we agree. Yes, he did. But I started thinking, the more I thought about it, I just started really thinking about all the dots connected here and how he's not been the same. He's been, since the Ryder Cup loss and since the kind of the shelling he's been taking from the public golf fans for the way he handled that, for honestly it goes all the way back to the way he picked the team and the way he picked and left some guys off like Keegan Bradley, and how it did, part of it, even when you watch it on Full Swing, part of it did seem like it was a best friends club that he was picking, and when numbers said otherwise, but at the time you could kind of understand both sides of it, so neither here nor there, but it all, these little negative things all start to pile up. And Zach Johnson now, at least for the second time, because he did it at the Waste Management as well, now at the Masters, the biggest stage in golf for the season, he loses his cool when the fans are giving him shit. And let's be honest, they're giving him shit sarcastically because of the spotlight he was in for the Ryder Cup. I don't think the fans at Augusta would have necessarily reacted, given him a little sarcastic clap, the way they did. Now, a sarcastic clap, like, that's going to happen, but, you know, you could hear them kind of, you know, quote unquote cheering him on after making triple bogey on that hole. I do think that goes back to the fans knowing exactly where he's been for the last year in the eyes of U.S. golf. And the way he's handled himself since the Ryder Cup is just not a good look. Coming off the ass whooping we just took in Rome from the Europeans, and now getting ready for them to come back here, not next year, the year after, there needs to be a show of force, a show of strength for the U.S. squad. There can't be this divided field. There can't be this weakened kind of morale and attitude. Zach Johnson walking around the course bitching and whining anytime anybody gets in his ears for the choices he made as a professional golfer in the public eye, that's not who I want leading the team. That's not someone that I feel like – I mean, sure, I'm not going to say that. The golfers would stay behind him because they're in their own club. They're all friends, whatever. But that's not who I as a fan want to see out there fist pumping and pumping up my guys. Zach Johnson to me feels like a one-and-done Ryder Cup captain. I'm not saying he's not going to be involved with the Ryder Cup because he's has a long-standing history with the Ryder Cup. I think he'll still be kind of involved. But to be the guy again, something would have to drastically change for me to be all right with that. I don't want it. Grow up.
Well, he's sure as shit not going to get – he's not the captain again. Let's pick this apart for a second. There's a couple of things going on here. And because also the way you present it is almost like that's not our right. He lost. Now imagine for a moment, everybody, Steve Stricker's a god. It helps that he's one of the nicest human beings out there. He's got a great family. He's from Wisconsin, you know, aw shucks. And he's like secret BFFs with Tiger Woods. All of that helps that we love, Steve Stricker, but also he was at the helm when we laid the smackdown. Great. If it would have gone the other way in Rome, Zach Johnson wouldn't have been I don't think Zach Johnson deserves the volume and vitriol he's receiving.
No, probably not
anymore.
So,
multiple things can be true at the same time. Fans, get over it. Move on. The schmucks that are still, if you're at Augusta National and because I read a post, on Reddit, so it must have been true.
Yeah, right.
But I read a post and it was somebody said, hey, I was there on the 12th tee, when the Zach Johnson thing was going down, here's what happened. And it's like, it started before that, I guess, coming off 11, Zach was already hot. Some of the guys were chirping him and he's like, really guys, fucking really here? And they're like, yeah, really? Like jawing him back. Two-way street. Fans, you're schmucks. It's Augusta National, just like you said. Have a little respect. And sure, anybody's like, oh, get off my lawn. But not everything's one big freaking joke, everyone. Like, so have a little bit of fucking respect. Second, this guy put himself out there to do the Ryder Cup captaincy. He didn't win. So when people are like, he didn't deliver, he did this. We're all really tough with putting our criticism out there. And also the people outside the ropes chirping this guy just to see if you can get him to snap. Again, two things can be true at the same time. Mm-hmm. He snapped and you're supposed to be better than that. But as a fan, as a human, as an adult, aren't you supposed to be better than that as well? Let me chirp. And for, again, for the crowd that's like, it's part of the game, bud. It's part of the game. To a point it is. Mm-hmm. We are 5-6 months removed from that event. What sucks to me about all this, and this is why I'm done with my soapbox moment about the other fans, because God knows I'm not a perfect human, but like, I'm not going to jump down Zach Johnson's throat.
I'm not saying I expect Zach Johnson to be perfect either. Like the fact that he like snapped off.
And I'm not defending that.
I'm not blaming him for that, but it's not who I want as my captain.
No, nobody wants him as his captain anymore. But if to be fair, had he won in Rome, you would want him as your captain again. So it's not about the Masters thing or him blowing up at West with the waste management. He lost, next man up. And this is the bigger point. So again, I get sad for moments like that because the schmucks out there who think that it's fun to chirp these guys to that point, even chirping them publicly. Like, what do you get out of it publicly pointing out somebody else's failures?
But sure, honestly, no, I get that. Yeah,
who out there is sitting to themselves and like, and if you and your buddies are like, oh, did you see that? It's like, dude, grow up. There's so many other ways you can generate positive energy or at least have an impact on the game than being the guy who screams mashed potatoes during the backswing, or yeah, Baba Booey during the follow through, or oh my God, I'm the guy who got Zach Johnson to say fuck you at the Masters. Well, you know what? Yeah, fuck
no
you. Because that asshole buried the biggest news of the week coming out of the Masters concerning the Ryder Cup. And that's Captain Tiger Woods. And I quote, it's something that Seth the CEO of the PGA, and I are going to sit back and talk about after this event. I said I'm going to be busy for a couple of weeks, so let me focus on getting through this and hopefully getting another jacket, and then we can sit back and talk about it next week. So it's happening, guys. Folks, it's Captain Tiger. It's going to be at Bethpage, and it's going to be, I mean, I'll tell you what, it is going to be a lot of familiar faces, but I also think that he's going to be pretty cutthroat. I think Tiger's going to kind of lead by example in what you alluded to earlier, the good old boys network, the fun fan club, because the exact same theorem exists for that. Had we won, we would all be sitting here talking about how camaraderie is everything. And you got to
How he made the right gut call and bringing in Justin Thomas. I get it. But that's how sports is. It's just how it's how we are as fans. We're reactionary.
I agree with all that. My bigger point was, again, don't be a schmuck Don't be a schmuck as a fan and get pleasure from just trying to poke and needle other people. I think it's just soft and it's weak. And B, I think that Tiger is going to step up and say, like, all right, we tried it the other way. Now we're going to try it my way. Here are the parameters for success here. And I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if he went like, you know, here's the top six. I'm going to take 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Maybe 14, like, you know, down there where it's, you know, outside the top 10. Because back when I was growing up, captain's picks were slim. You got two, then you got four. Now it's half the team. And I agree that it should be because there's more factors to consider, especially with how long a window they have to gather their points.
But so, I also think it's all right for, like, I'd be all right if, as Cat Tiger or and future captains after him, if they did just publicly say to their, you know, their colleagues, their fellow golfers, these are the parameters I'm going to be looking at for my captain's picks. I think that's what you're kind of getting at. Like, even if you put certain stats on it, like if he says that I'm going to be looking for someone like this and this and this, like that's what I'm looking to fill. You need to hit these marks in order for me to even consider picking you. You know what I mean? I'm all right with that. I think that's the purpose of the captain. He gets to have that discretion to pick the teams how he wants to. That's the whole point of picking a captain. I'd rather him just say it out publicly so everyone knows what they're shooting for.
Shit. I mean, come on. It's Tiger Woods. It's the New England Patriots of golf where, you know, he's a closed shop. Nobody knows anything until his car's already wrapped around a tree down somewhere in Malibu. Sorry, too soon.
Jesus. It's not too soon, but
I think what we want and how Tiger operates are two totally polar opposite things in the sense of, I think he's going to keep it close to the chest. Mm-hmm. I think his vice captains are going to be Freddie Couples, Steve Stricker. And then, I mean, maybe Zach Johnson, because we don't know what those relationships are like. And maybe he's Tiger and I could agree on this. Maybe he thinks that we're all just a bunch of assholes and idiots and that Zach Johnson's a brilliant guy and blah, 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 blah. Who knows?
Very well could think that, though. You're not wrong.
I think if anything, Zach Johnson gets kind of a scholarship invite as a vice captain saying, like, you know what, man, you have been on so many of these, both the good and the bad. You've taken your lumps. We owe you, as opposed to better luck next time. All right, that's enough Ryder Cup talk. Back to the Masters. Scottie Scheffler.
I know.
There's a new Beyonce album out. And it's the Cowboy Carter. Have you seen this? Have you heard this album yet?
The worst piece of music collection I've ever heard.
How do I mute your mic?
You're actually saying you enjoy it?
Phenomenal. It's an incredible.
As a Southern man, you grew up in the South, like you grew up listening to, like, I'm assuming a little bit of classic country music and whatnot. Some of the songs she covered.
First of all, my parents are from Michigan, so I grew up listening to Bob Seger and the Beatles and shit that. Okay. Country music, I went through a phase in high school because I liked girls and the local girls liked country music. So I did go to a handful of Tim McGraw concerts. I got to see him three times in 1 year, actually, and twice it was free. It was pretty dope. But first of all, the whole Southern thing, Beyonce's from like Houston and Louisiana. She is Southern.
I'm not saying the covers of the classic country songs I think were awful. I think they're terrible.
Her cover of her reimagination of Jolene.
If you even say Jolene amazing. Was good, I hate Absolutely that she changed good. Words. I hated all of it.
I think it's all great because Dolly, because she obviously had the whatchamacallit, the kind of praise or the okay from on high to say, yeah, go for it, queen, knock it out of the park. She did a true cover of Blackbird that my daughter is obsessed with.
I don't think I've heard that one because I had to stop listening to the songs on the album. I just did not enjoy anything. Then you skipped it
because the opening song is called American Requiem, and it is a little kind of like, what are we getting into here? Because it opens with this almost, what I dug about it was it kind of had a throwback feel of a true album front to back, an experience that flowed one right into the next versus just 12 songs or 17 songs thrown together. And you hope they're in the right order to kind of peak those hits. It does kind of flow. Willie Nelson does some drop-ins. He does the smoke hour with Willie and B. You know, she does a duet with Miley Cyrus called The Two Most Wanted, and it's fucking good. And then she's got some bangers on there. You know, some kind of like true kind of hip hop, whatever. So I think it is an absolutely phenomenal, outstanding album. And one of the opening lines is she says, "I'm snapping my fingers like Thanos." And all I can think is, I think we're entering that era of Scotty's Inevitable. It's Scotty or the Field moving forward, including this week. And I kind of agree with the way Scott Van Pelt put it when he was talking about the Masters, where if you ask me if I'm betting, there's value in the field. Duh. Yep. You don't put all your eggs in one basket.
Of course there is.
Who I think is going to win? I think Scotty.
I feel like we all said that. It was weird, but I feel like as a collection, like as analysts or schmucks like us in front of a camera, I feel like everybody kind of for once felt the same way for the first time in a long time.
But tell me who wasn't nervous. Tell me if you weren't nervous after Bryson comes out with 65.
Of course. Of course.
But you know what I saw and here? Okay, so do we have the breaking news buzzer?
Oh, sure. Why not? I'll play that for you. Give me a second.
I've turned the corner on Bryson.
I noticed that on Sunday.
I'm okay with because I noticed some humility in his press conferences this week.
Yes.
I think that he is kind of seeing the big picture. He's a little bit older. I think T2 from some of the stuff that I'm giving him shit about, like he hears me, that I'm criticizing him about the way that he's saying, we should get back together. We should be friends. I'm giving him shit about it because I'm like, shut your mouth. You caused this problem. Go sit in your room until mommy and I figure out how to deal with it. But at the same time, it's a glimpse into, he wants this to be over because he wants this competition again. Well, you can't have your cake and eat it too. So just be quiet and go bounce around Augusta National. I was,
which is what he's doing now.
I thought the bigger kind of story, even with him, wasn't the fact that, first of all, the Crushers logo. I'm not gonna lie, I might buy a hat. I kind of dig it. It kind of has a Mighty Ducks.
Man, you've really come like full circle.
I might get a hat just because again, it's got kind of like the second wave of the Mighty Ducks outfits, not the original one, like the Anaheim Ducks.
Yeah,
it has that kind of a feel to it. So I kind of dig that a little bit. I think that's what they were going for. But you know, he honestly, I just think that him winning would have done monumental things for us to just be like, all right, I don't think it's going to actually, it would have changed anything in the game in these negotiations. Whatnot.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think they are what they are at this point.
And even with the amount of live talent that was there and all the stars, viewership was down again. And it was 20%. And I think it's not coming back, folks. There was a bubble. This wave kind of went up and it crashed. It was the COVID golf bubble was real. You know, it was one of the only things you could do to get the fuck out of the house, you know, go outdoors, exercise, and then people got hooked, and then all of a sudden there's the social media spinoffs and yada yada yada. So our attention and our bandwidth has been diffused. And so there's a lot of folks out there that maybe were casual viewers. I don't think people are tuning out because live golf and people are not watching the end of the Valero Texas Open because Bryson and Brooks aren't duking it out. That 20% just isn't the casual or the weekly golf follower. Now somebody else would say, and people will say, well, we're talking about the Masters. This is supposed to be, you know, it. Listen, I would watch the Daytona 500 if I wasn't allowed to leave the house, but if I am, I'm not watching. So those people who would have tuned into the Masters, you know, probably that November Masters during football season, ratings were, you know, because that's all we had to do. And then there's the trickle down effect. But now, you know, let's look at how big March Madness was, both for the men and the women, the dynasties that were established for UConn, and this kind of, I don't think the bubble burst. I think this was much more of a kind of eruption and, you know, building something for the women's game with Caitlin Clark and the draft last night. So all of that in the bigger ecosphere. Yeah. I mean, and that, the viewership's down. I don't think Gimmicks is going to get it back. I don't think even any kind of like deal with the PIF is going to get it back. There's a new baseline for the quote unquote average golf fan. And that's where this is going to be fun for me as a mental exercise. That's where what Rory brought up starts becoming more of the reality. But for us, the fan, we don't give a shit. Meaning the price for everything on the back end is going up, but us, the viewer, we don't pay anything except for time to tune in. And so how do you make that work when the sponsors aren't getting the number of eyeballs that they were either promised or were projected? We're not getting, you know, anything new, really. It's getting stagnant and people are just getting bored. I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to watch the PGA Tour when they have to resort to caffeine TV or whatever the fuck Liv is, you know, streaming on from Australia.
I'm glad you brought up like a network, because I think that's just what's going to happen. I think the constant that we're hearing from the masses of golf fans that are still sticking around, but do even a good chunk that is still sticking around do seem to be a bit unhappy. And I think the main thing that everyone's unhappy on is the broadcast, and not necessarily the broadcast personalities. Cause I think the PGA has made some big strides in the personalities and shuffling in this kind of newer wave of broadcast personalities, and it's working. But the next step needs to be that exactly what the masses are kind of complaining about. And that's the amount of golf they actually get to see. And we brought it up. It's been brought up a bunch with Augusta, and the Masters is its own animal. Back to tradition and the way they have it set up about the timing of things. But I think rounds on the weekends should be, the broadcast should start earlier, or there needs to be some sort of more app available viewing for the morning rounds, because people want to tune into that. They want to have the custom feel that the Masters app had, where you can create your own featured group where the camera jumps around. And yes, it's a huge ask. Because you're talking about adding more guys with cameras on the course. You're talking about following every single golfer. Like, that's probably...
They have that in place now. They have the ability to capture it because they're already doing it. So since they're already doing it, what you're talking about is taking the app in where right now the Masters app, which is the gold standard and kind of like, you know...
In all of sports, not just golf.
It's the way they got this thing engineered. And like, if you're like me, you just airplayed it from your iPad or your iPhone up to your TV.
Yeah, so I didn't watch CBS or ESPN once.
No, because they have the option on there just to click on whatever broadcast is being broadcast. And so that's what I lived on. I think the next iteration of that is, it's not that the network is going to go earlier. What the Masters app is going to do is say, oh, cool, don't worry about it. We'll just make it smart TV friendly. Boom, just download the Masters app on your smart TV. And that's how they're going to bridge that gap, because they have the eyeballs now. They have the upper hand. They know, and especially with us bitching about it, by everybody going, hey, we need earlier coverage so that, you know, we don't have to use your app. And it's like, but you're using the app anyway. You're begrudgingly using it.
I'm talking about like all PGA events, you know what I mean? Or at least maybe start with the signature events. Like, I think that's what I'm saying. Like, people have expected what we get with the Augusta, with the Masters and whatnot. But I think there's got to be, and this would require more of a business. Though. No, I know it exists, but I don't think it's as accessible as people want it to be. I think that's the big issue. And yes, maybe that's an unfair bridge to try to close for the fans, but but that's going to involve more of a, this isn't going to be a quick fix overnight that I think people would expect it to be like, oh, just start streaming it. Like, that's massive business impacts, because now you got to switch over the way ads are structured and where ads are playing to it, and all the it changes everything. If you start to lean more on streaming, if they do go to YouTube instead of, you know what I mean? Like, this things like that, that it changes a lot.
What you just described is literally how the ecosystem is set up now, where the tournaments are from. I mean, Thursday at the RBC, I'll be watching live the very first group tee off, because ESPN has that streaming contract right now. ESPN Plus has it for the rest of the PGA Tour events. The USGA, whoever they partner with, whether it's you, I think they go through Peacock because they have the NBC contract. Yeah. So the Masters. Yep. So what you and I are talking about is literally, again, just the Masters saying, let's get our app on smart TVs so people don't have, so it's not a pain in the ass. Everything's accessible. We're just fucking lazy. And you know what? It's because also what you would notice is, even when ESPN was carrying the coverage, it was still like CBS crews, CBS, like they all shit one singular shop at the Masters, as opposed to maybe some other tournaments like You might have the BBC and NBC showing up. Although right now, I think the Open Championship, we use Sky Sports and, you know, the BBC crew. But as far as the coverage was concerned, I do think it can. Well, I was fine with it too, but we're nerds. I think if you do want to open it up more, I don't know, maybe if you're going to do CBS at 3, then go CBS Sports Network at noon. You know, let the hungry fan who wants to get into it, get into it. All right. Coverage was great. Ted Scott, the caddy for Scottie Scheffler.
Oh, yeah.
Not to mention, you know, so fun little dig on him. This is his second with Scotty. If you didn't catch it already, he did two with Bubba Watson. So he's four. He's got four total. This time he was walking off with the flag stick from 18.
I saw him freaking waving it around.
Well, there's a funny story. Joe LaCava, Tiger's old caddy, who was actually Freddie Couples' caddy before that.
Yeah.
He was Freddie's caddy in 92 when Freddie won. And Joe, if you got a minute, go look up these like Freddie Couples, Joe LaCava fireside chats online. They're great. And what the story that he tells is the tradition's always just the flag. The caddy walks over, takes the flag off of the pin. That's the caddy's trophy traditionally. Well, yeah. I guess Joe LaCava, when Freddie won, he said he wanted something a little extra. And so he just said, "I'm taking the whole flag." And as he was walking off, the security person for Augusta National just said, "You know, that's property of Augusta National." And I guess he said, "If you want it, you can take it out of my hands." And he just kept on walking, which I think is kind of a badass move. I hope this is Augusta National we're talking about here. The list of people they've blackballed is not short and it is distinguished. I just don't want them to see this as like a, "Hey, now we let it slide with Joe. This is not going to become a thing," which I'm sure they could quietly get the word out.
Sure. But it wouldn't shock me if they did try to make an example.
or if they just say, you know, "Dear Mr. Scott, congratulations on yada, yada, yada. At your earliest convenience, please return." You know what I'm saying? Like, that's how they do it.
Just the flagpole, keep the flag, but we need the pole back because we have members expecting to play. Like something silly like that.
Well, not for a while. Remember that place shut down, which I feel bad for Cutter. I hope that Mr. Bob Estes isn't jerking him along. So Teddy Scott's having a pretty good payday. He is now second all time amongst the caddies behind Pappy Stokes and Willie Peterson. Look him up. We won't go into history lessons here. Max Homa has that dog in him. I think he's going to be, you know, look out for Max at Valhalla. All it takes is a little bit of confidence and a couple of those close calls until you break through. I mean, Scottie Scheffler, we saw that with him. He had a close call at the Masters before he started already collecting them. What else jumped out at you this week?
Well, did you see? I actually just saw this right before we came on TikTok. It was an old story about Scottie Scheffler, and I think he said it again this week, which is why it happened. It still refers to the most important par save he ever had in his career was actually when he was still in Q school on the Korn Ferry Tour to basically save his round and keep him going, and you know, eventually got him out of. Got him onto the tour and kept the ball rolling forward. And I just thought that was cool because I think in these, it just really shows like in this move, even though this is his second Masters, that he's been here before, he knows what it's like. He still takes that moment to sit back and like kind of reminisce on the journey he's taken to achieve something like this. And then the only other thing I wanted to point out with the Masters is because you mentioned Bryson early, and yes, I think I am also enjoying the side of Bryson that we're seeing. This humble pie kind of side of Bryson. And I think it's good that he's kind of honestly had this time to make for creating content, because that's what he's doing with his spare time right now. He's creating content on YouTube and on Twitch and whatnot. TikTok, YouTube and TikTok. And he posted this video after the Masters of, you know, really him sitting on his couch, going to sit down on his couch and being like, "Man, really bummed out, really, you know, lost it at the Masters, whatnot." But then his big white fluffy dog comes in and is giving him all this love, and he just gets this big smile on his face and starts playing with his dog, moves on. And he goes, "Ah, there's always next time." And it's like, it feels like the ability for him to create the content that, and honestly, that the LIV Tour has provided him the extra time to do that, I think has done wonders for his psyche and for his confidence and his work-life balance, to where we are getting to see this different side of Bryson now. And it's kind of nice because I've only started seeing it this week. And like you said, in the way he's talking, because I haven't been watching the LIV Tour religiously. I haven't been really paying attention to what he's been saying, but I'm used to his kind of uptight analytical ways of before. which could rub people the wrong way. And I also am enjoying it now, what I've seen over the last couple of days after the Masters.
I mean, I've always been a Bryson fan. I'm giving honest reactions to the moments that are like, shut up, dude. Yeah, he's a human. I mean,
yeah.
And I think where some of their lack of awareness comes in is people like Bryson, though, thinking that they're, you know, because of them that we should change a lot of this stuff. That again, we talk about the sheer volume of golfers that have enough talent to play at this level. You know, the Brysons are few and far between, the Jordan Spieths, the Justin Thomases. We can rattle off 20 guys that we would consider superstars, but that's 20 out of how many thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of professional golfers in that same parallel era who are giving it a go. So it's a very slim percentage of folks who get up there. So even this Masters thing is showing us that even when the best of the best of the best get together, you know, it still doesn't draw the eyeballs. So once again, maybe it's just that the game is retreating a little bit in overall popularity for consuming this product, because there's other areas you can measure golf consumption and see that things are up. I'm super pumped. Do we have any kind of updates on when the Monday Q at Myrtle Beach is going to,
let me look that up because
I was actually, when we were getting ready for the show, I read some comments from Dan Rappaport, you know, Barstool Sports foreplay guy. And he was saying to him, and I love the way that he put it, this is one of the most unique social experiments, you know, that we can think of, because you're taking 16 people whose job it is to draw attention to themselves. And you're putting them all together. You're going to let them all run these cameras. And it's worked. You're not, don't say a word for 2 months. It's a similar marketing strategy, kind of like when the iPhone, you know, that employee mistakenly, quote unquote, left an iPhone prototype at a bar one time. I still to this day think that was a plant, because I don't think that companies like Apple or anybody in the tech R&D area is going to allow any security protocols that would allow those prototypes to get outside the doors. You know what I mean? It's like, it's a little too far-fetched for whoopsies, my prototype, which is also why. So it's like, once they said that, then everybody had to wait. Instead of the whoopsies, they just flat out said it. Hey, we're going to be over here doing a thing that you all would love to check out, but guess what? You're gonna have to wait. Sorry, but don't worry. It's in the books. Well, I mean, it's a very real, raw kind of, that's the generation of media consumption we're in. There's no more gimmicks anymore. We have the internet. We have access to information 24 hours a day. So you can't outsmart the audience. You just have to give it to them straight.
Yeah. So I was just looking up. So they're still just saying the end of April, and obviously the Myrtle Beach Classic is May 9th to the 12th. So that's the second week of May. So I'm assuming it's going to be like literally right in the last weekend there of April. But I can't seem to get a clear answer on exactly when, but I am definitely looking forward to that, because I just want to see how some of these guys have been watching for a couple of years, how they do fare. And I don't want to, I'm going to actually pay attention to the Myrtle Beach Classic, which is technically the second tier PGA event that weekend. Just a passing eye to see how said winner does. I want to know how, because the guys that entertain me on YouTube, I want to kind of see how they stack up against the pros.
That's exactly what I was about to say, is you could almost see this entire secondary I think I've said ecosystem four or five times today. Somebody
it's
get
been
a count
at least
on,
three.
Get the intern on that. You could almost see this futuristic path of talent pool, where it's like, all right, there's a different equation we're going to use. You know, 95% of the slots in these tournaments are going to go to the tried and true PGA Tour guys, because that's what we're set up. That's our primary objective. But we're going to hold 5% of slots or 10 slots or whatever it is. It starts growing in numbers. This week it's one, because when you earn it, you've earned it under these conditions and course conditions and blah, 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 blah. So we know that you have some technical capabilities, but we also know that you're going to bring X hundred thousands or millions of eyeballs with you once you're, if you do get into the field. And from a product standpoint, the PGA Tour, everybody, you know, you like to position it as their job is to get the best players in the world. No, their job is to put on a product that's going to draw eyeballs. And if the future of that is a combination of things, and all of a sudden we start to find out that it's more fun to watch people like, you know, you and me go out there and holy shit, Fat Perez can actually shoot 60, you know, like, it's like, wait a minute, these people have talent. And then, you know, the game starts evolving that way, because who does a sponsor want? Do they want the guy who can shoot 68 or the guy who can shoot 68 and has a personality? It's the nature of professional athletics, and the PGA Tour's mission is not necessarily to just get the best players together all the time. It's to put the best product out there that's going to draw the most attention. And so they really do have to look at the bigger picture. This thing is going to get a lot of shade thrown at it because those guys didn't earn it. They didn't earn it. They didn't earn that. What? They earned their followings.
They've been grinding for their followings for years. Are you kidding me? You're trying to tell me that doesn't take work, because it's bullshit. The amount of work that takes is unknown to so many people still.
And if whoever qualifies from that crew goes out and shoots 85, 92 and misses the cut, so be it. Because you know what? They're going to do that, and they're still going to have more people watching and following and impacting the tournament than the pro who shoots, you know, 69, 71 and misses the cut by three. Thanks for showing up. Like, at least this person over here brought attention, value. So
go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, it's just an interesting concept moving forward where you do have to shake things up. We do need to shake things up. I don't think it's as dire as everybody else out there is saying, because quite frankly, it's too big to die. It's not like if all of a sudden the PGA Tour is gonna come out and go, folks, we've had a good run. We understand viewership's down. We're just gonna go home. No, it's gonna be some years of trying to figure out the best formula. And I think it's just hilarious when everybody says we want the best golfers every week going to head to head. They don't want that, because the way that they have to gear up for some of these tournaments,
watering down the product.
Yes. I mean, even this week going signature event right after a major, I do understand it a little bit, because why not ride the high of those folks that you bought in or got in for the Masters, because the CJ Cup at Colonial ain't bringing you in. As much as I get excited for the Zurich and the team golf and the walk-up music, that's not bringing in
that
new
fans. That just confuses
fans.
More people than...
That energizes the base. That doesn't bring in new voters. You do have to do things like the RBC and remind everybody what a special tournament this is, and that the PGA Tour is much more than just a feeder, so to speak, for the majors. But that's also why I'm rocking the Pete Dye hat this week, because Harbortown Lynx, Pete Dye course. We'll get to that in a couple minutes. We still have to clean up some Masters stuff. But do you want to say hi to Underdog before we do anything else? I realize that we've gotten this deep into the show and we haven't heard from Gingerbread.
Gingerbread. I think it's Gingerbread. Yeah, let's hear from Gingerbread real fast.
I've been doing this a year.
Fantasy Sports Corp and Underdog Fantasy have teamed up to start your fantasy season off in the win column with Best Ball. What is Best Ball? It's quite simply the easiest way to win. No team management, no trades, no waivers. It's their biggest contest ever, and it has only gotten bigger. You simply have to sit and win. You don't even have to set your lineup. Always get your best score every week. Just enter a contest, draft your team, and Underdog will do the rest. What could make this even better? How about free money? Up to $100 using our exclusive promo code. Go online now and use the promo code DIVPIV to double your deposit up to $100. You tell them Gingerbread sent you. Good girl.
It is Gingerbread. And someone who was not a good, well, not a good, good guy, but good girl here. Did you see this real fast? One last master story here. Did you see the reporter who asked Neil Shipley, the low amateur, that it looked like Tiger Woods had written something down on a piece of paper and handed it to him out there on the course. And Neil was like, what are you talking about? He didn't give me anything. Next question, please. he didn't say next question, please, but his eyes said next question, please shut the fuck up.
Listen, if you tuned in to hear about the RBC and our deep analytics, I will tell you this. Andrew does more analysis than I do, and I'm still beating him at this point. So there you go.
It's close. I faltered this week, past week in the Masters. You got me there.
Akshay was a big for me.
Akshay was big too. The last signature event I faltered into. So those were the
We both had Scotty, but I had the kicker. I had Ludvig and as the runner up. And so in a week like Augusta National, that's huge. Yes. We got a couple of Masters stories we got to get after. The first one was what you were just talking about before I went off the rails. Remind me again.
Neil Shipley.
Thank you,
and
Shipley.
The reporter asked him what Tiger handed him, and he was like, nothing. Get out of here. Shut up, please. You're going to get me killed. The hunter's coming down the alley.
Neil Shipley looks like Judge Schmales' son from Caddyshack, or yes! nephew from Caddyshack, if he grew up to be a little cooler and he let his hair grow out.
What was his name? What was the kid's name? You keep talking. I'm going to look it up.
You will get nothing in like it. Yeah. I want a cheese. Okay, so Neil Shipley, real quick, if you, for the uninitiated, he was the runner up to last year's U.S. Amateur. A lot, you know, Masters is huge for inviting amateurs. They invite the U.S. Amateur winner and the runner up and the U.S. Mid Amateur champion. Shout out Stu, baby, he represented this week. And so Neil Spalding.
Spalding, it's 100%.
Yeah, he looks like Spalding finally hit puberty, developed a short game, grew his hair out, and is actually cool now. So Neil Shipley. Gets to he was at Ohio State. He was going, you know, head to head with Nick Dunlap. Was it Nick Dunlap? No, who won the U.S. Amateur last year?
Oh, shit, I forget.
It was Nick Dunlap because then Nick Dunlap.
I think it was Dunlap. It was. Yeah, I think it was.
It was Nick Dunlap. Anyways, so he was going head to head with him. And first thing, Golf Digest or Golf Magazine or somebody did a one-on-one sit-down with him at a Waffle House in Augusta, which I think is fucking beautiful. Yep. If you want to get to the heart of grinded-out golf, stop at a Waffle House. Second, he makes the cut. Low amateur. Another big deal. You know, it's a huge, huge honor and deal to be low amateur at Augusta National for the Masters, because most of those folks, you only get one shot at it. Not everybody's a Tiger Woods where you get to play in three or four of them as an amateur because you won that many, or, you know, even just kind of Nick Dunlap, for example. Again, he won the U.S. Junior and then he won the U.S. Amateur, because even if he wouldn't have gone pro and won that tournament, he had an invite by, you know, winning the U.S. Amateur.
Sure.
So Neil Shipley makes the cut. And then on the weekend, he finds out Saturday night that he's paired with Tiger Woods for the final round. Oh, no, by the way, it's Tiger's 100th round at the Masters. So, I mean, it was so
that's
cool.
Going to go down in somewhere in Wikipedia and Google internet history. It's going to be played his 100th round with, and he's going to be a little footnote. Neil Shipley.
Yeah.
That's great.
It's fucking great. And if you didn't see Tiger shaking hands with Vern Lundquist, I teared up. Walks off the 16.
100%. The way he came back to him, because he almost didn't see him, and then he stopped and came all the way back.
And the picture's out there, Tiger shaking hands with a tree and everything like that, but there's Papa Vern just sitting there. And I called him Papa Vern, but Uncle Vern Vern Lundquist's final call, where he says, the hour belongs to Scottie Scheffler, four-stroke lead with two to play. And that's
that
the last
final sign off.
40. And I didn't get emotional until I saw the pictures of Tiger shaking his hand. I'm like, oh my God, that's like Vern. He's done. Like that's huge. So I thought that was pretty cool. But what you're getting at is, yes, apparently a reporter in the interview post said, hey, Neil, what did he hand you? And Neil just looked to somebody off camera.
Oh yeah.
And I don't know if they were wearing a green jacket, a red shirt, or some combination.
I'm pretty sure they were in a black suit with black sunglasses
and just going, shut the fuck up. Yep. And he just said, and we could also be, this is where I was saying earlier, we're hungry for conspiracies. This is just
fun. It was probably literally nothing.
I gotta see the tape now. We gotta find out. Did is
so
actually
I didn't
happen.
See anything. I yeah, didn't see it. So I should say I didn't see anything with the video that was showed in, like, with that clip from the reporter. Sure. I saw nothing at all being handed, being even possibly handed, or even hands coming close to each other. Honestly, like they were just walking down the fairway or walking off the tee box together closely, but I didn't see anything.
It could have been anything. He could have been handing him a tee. He could have been saying like, hey, you dropped your this, which I don't think Tiger's a big, like, let me pick up my competitor's pen.
And because we know how Tiger does jokes around.
Well, except for the tampon with JT. That was great. Yeah. This Tiger, though, and I feel good for this kid, because he also got Tiger Woods, and he got like a fan experience. You saw them chatting. You saw them walking and talking.
No.
If Tiger was in the hunt for this thing, he ain't saying shit. Tony Finau famously said, you know, in the 2019 Masters, after about four or five holes, he said, hey, Tiger, you know, how are the kids? And he just goes, they're fine. And he walked and he kept on walking. And I was like, oh, okay. And so it's also be careful what you wish for, kids. I loved rewatching that 2019 special they had on the Saturday.
I still haven't rewatched it yet. I just haven't had the time. But so I got to, because I wanted to watch it in its entirety. So I haven't watched it yet, but I got to do that.
It's really good. One last Masters, and then we'll give 10 solid fantasy minutes to Harbortown. Jason Day. Being asked to remove the Malbon championship sweater vest. Where do you stand on sweater vest gate?
So Personally, I thought it was ugly. From a personal standpoint, it's not my style. I thought it was ugly as hell. But at the same time,
it looks like a rejected Mountain Dew label.
Yeah, actually, it's not a bad, comparison. But when the second I was seeing that people were quoting and pulling up screenshots of the Masters dress code regulations and like Article 16A6,
he was blatantly in violation of it.
He was. So, and I'm like, okay, so they're obviously give a shit enough to wear fine. I get it. Ask him to take the damn sweater vest off. He obviously came here with a mission to look different with the new brand of Mile Bond with the baggy pants and then the sweater vest. So, I mean, look, did he achieve it still? 100%. Got exactly what they wanted out of it. They got eyes on him. They got eyes on the brand. So it worked. So yeah, they asked him to take it off. He took it off, but it was already a success before that. So I get it both ways.
And you can order it yourself for $250 online.
Jesus.
All right. So Harbortown Golf Links, the RBC, the Heritage. It's the RBC Heritage. It's been the Heritage Classic, the Heritage, the MCI Heritage, et cetera, et cetera. One of our more traditional spots. It is a signature event, which is kind of one of those, like, how did this get a signature event status? We said it. It's post-Masters. Let's keep people around. And you look at those tournaments that you can't just write this off. I mean, it's been around 1969. I mean, this is a standard bearer.
And although the name has changed, Harbortown Links has been fairly consistent for a while with this tournament. You can't write this off just simply because the field is still so strong. Like, whoever wins this is a legitimate win that you can't shy away from giving them credit for. So this is another good one right here after the Masters. Very different than the Masters, though, in a lot of ways. Roughly 500 yards shorter. So we're playing two very different games compared to last week and this week, but some of the same kind of, I guess, core things that these guys need to be good at, but it just in different ways. So last week we were talking about strokes gained around the green and whatnot. A little bit similar, but slightly different. We're extending that range a little bit. We're going, for me at least, I'm going to go right into my key stats here. Strokes gained short game is going to be something I'm looking at this week. It's not often on a course on the PGA circuit here that strokes gained short game pops as a higher than average kind of stat for the winner or the top 10 guys here. So I'm going to follow that. I'm going to follow that knowledge. So we're going to go strokes gained short game. And then the par threes at this course, strokes gained par three, I think is going to be key. Two of the par threes are in the top five hardest holes in this course, including the hardest hole in this course. So I like the par threes. And given that this is such a short course, if you're good at that, those par three yardages, you're probably going to be pretty decent at your approach shots as well. So it all kind of goes hand in hand. That's what I'm looking with at on top of my typical approach putting and off the tee.
Like
and
it.
Bermuda grass.
Ooh. Look at you getting into the
par 71. Am I getting you excited?
Opposite. I just had to Google what's the opposite of an erection, and it's called an Andrew. If you were curious.
Jesus. Good thing I have a girlfriend already. I hope she's not listening.
All right. Anyway, I'll be honest with you. I have not done too much looking or research into this. The most research I've done for this week is seeing that they kicked things off with Matt Fitzpatrick wearing his plaid or tartan. I think they call it the Heritage plaid or whatever. This is another jacket tournament. They've been handing out jackets for a long time. Fun fact, it used to be a yellow jacket. It used to be a yellow or gold jacket, and that green jacket, gold jacket, who gives a shit? But they used to hand out yellow jackets, and Jack Nicklaus was actually the last one to get one of those Golden Bear.
I was just going to reference that picture because I feel like that picture still floats around in a lot of circuits.
It's so good. And then they went to this plaid. The Colonial also hands out a plaid jacket. And then I'm trying to think. Arnold Palmer does the red sweater. The Waste Management does a blue blazer. So there's a whole jacket ecosystem out there. There's the fifth ecosystem for you. So I've been kind of watching that. I watched Matt Fitzpatrick open it with a tee shot and the cannon going off and all sorts of kind of rednecky shit that they do in the low country. So I haven't done a lot of homework, but I did go rely on my trusty three strokes gained ball striking, strokes gained, putting, and strokes gained around the green. I applaud your short game strokes game, strokes gained, but I'm just going around the green here. And then I did make one tweak. I filtered by Pete Dye courses because Pete Dye courses are, this is a, you asked me earlier in the season, is there something kind of off the shelf is, or is there a formula for the Pete Dye courses? This is it. Target Golf. Mm-hmm. It's not overwhelmingly long. It's just, you have to put it in the right places. And to compare anything, not that you did this, but like, yeah, coming off of a week like Augusta where nothing's like Augusta. I mean, there's absolutely no course out there to replicate or prepare for it. But back to this kind of much more, if you can lock it in, then who's hot, who, you know, who do we think is going to cash in? So I locked it in on the Pete Dye courses and we got a few minutes left. So why don't we give them our emergency nine and then we can go back to living life.
Good old double click. I guess since Bud's laughing, I'm gonna tell you who I'm double clicking on for my emergency nine this week. Number nine, what I have a smooth transition. He took the headphones off. He's not even fucking listening to me right now. My number nine, Akshay Bhatia. My number eight, Matthew Pavon. Number seven, Xander Schauffele. Number six, Russell Henley. Number five, Christian Bezuidenhout. And number four, Ludwig Aubert. Number three, Wyndham Clark. Number two, Sahi Theegala. And number one, because I'm not going to until he proves me he can't finish in the top 10, is Scotty Scheffler. I will say that Scotty Scheffler, with my beliefs in no back-to-back wins and all that, like especially the high of a Masters, like he most likely won't win, but the man doesn't not finish in the top five, top 10 right now. So I'm going to just keep him in my emergency nine until he proves me otherwise.
I was about to make a different joke about Scotty Scheffler finishing because he's waiting on the birth of his first child, but that's why he's not in my emergency.
Oh, actually I forgot I think about
there's
that.
The wild card of Meredith could pop at any moment and, you know, God bless them, but
damn,
I applaud
it.
You.
You're right.
But I don't disagree with your logic in the sense of until somebody knocks the king off the whatever his seat, his little chair, you know, why go against it? But, I like that. I don't mind that. But, what do we got? We going up against we got enough time. Here are my emergency nine for the RBC Heritage. Yeah. I got to say
you were hoping I took more time, didn't you?
I was kind of hoping they'd be like, all right, Michael, you're going to get to give your presentation on Monday. Thanks. And then all the stuff.
As kids, wasn't that the greatest feeling, by the way, just a short, that was, you just struck at my like childhood right there when you get, you get to go later this week instead. And you're like,
yeah,
I'm going to go home and chug a chocolate milk because I'm so fucking happy right now. You know what I mean? Like just childhood.
Chugging on your childhood. All right, so Boudreaux's got a different emergency nine coming at you, but most of it was kind of leaning into the numbers. They're all inside my top 20, but outside of that, like I said earlier, who was in form before the Masters? And I'm trying not to let last week overwhelmingly influence who I play, because it's much more than that when you get to these kind of courses. So number nine, Brian Harman. Number eight, Max Homa. Seven, Ludwig Aubert. Six, Sahi Theegala. Five, Christian Bezuidenhout. Four, Akshay. Three, Russell Henley. Two, Wyndham Clark. And number one, X gonna give it to you. He's been playing good. He showed a little bit at Augusta. Couldn't exactly finish it. I think he will get a green jacket, maybe before Rory. But Xander Schauffele is my number one. Fun, quick side story.
Yeah,
in case you missed it. At the beginning of the week, Scotty Scheffler shows up to Augusta National, and they gave him the wrong yardage book. You know, they gave him Xander Schauffele's book instead of Scotty Scheffler. Scheffler, Schauffele, that, you know, you're the volunteer there.
Yeah,
That's pretty, you know, okay one. But I guess in the putting green, he was just kind of joking with his family and Ted Scott, and he just goes, geez, what's guy got to do around here, you know, to get some respect, like to get some notoriety. And his mom looked at him and Ted Scott and says, I guess you have to go win again.
And then Bravo goes out there and wins. Again, I will say with your emergency nine that we have, I think all but I have Matthew Pavon in there and you have Brian Harman. Other than that, we have all the same guys in different order. So I guess this is not the week I'm catching you in your $2 million lead in our season long contest. But look, that's going to do it for us here, folks, on this Tuesday night on That Sports Podcast.
Tuesday. You can't avoid them. You can't. No, I didn't say I'm on board with it.
I'm proud of you. I'm so proud of you.
I also sang the Macarena in middle school. I didn't say I was a fan.
Okay, fine, fine. But we will be here every Tuesday, 8 o'clock on That Sports Podcast Network. And if you haven't noticed, we are now live on Rumble every week. So catch us on Rumble, catch us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and all your favorite podcast platforms whenever you want at your fingertips. I'm Andrew LeDuc. This is Bud Copeland. We are Divots and Pivots. And as always, stay classy.